plate a potential nugget.
And coming to receiving feedback, Tasha, you talk about three types of people, right? Lost cause, aware, don't care, and nudgeable. And I love the way I used to work in McKinsey. So whenever anyone breaks it down to three things, it's instinctively appealing. How do you look out for these types? And in what ways do we approach our feedback differently towards each of these segments?
So this might not be the answer you're looking for, but it's something I feel very passionate about. At some point in almost every keynote I give, someone will raise their hand and ask that question. And I think at the heart of that question is usually something to the effect of, how do I make other people more self-aware, right? And you brought up the different types of unself-aware people. And I'll just sort of briefly define what those are and then come back to my original point. So one are lost causes. These are the people who, despite the amount of feedback they get, they could hear the same thing from 100% of the people they work with and live with, and they are still convinced that they're close to perfection. These are not people that anyone is ever going to change. There's also the aware don't care. These are people who know exactly what a jerk they're being and will continue to do it anyway because they believe, mistakenly, that that's helping them achieve something they want, right? Success or some twisted version of success in their mind. The third, which is most people, is something that I named nudgeable, right? People who are able to be nudged. And if you're the right type of person, if you have the right kind of relationship, if you use the right kind of approach, you can very often help these people see themselves more clearly. This goes back to what we were discussing earlier, where, you know, most unself-aware people are not bad people. They just don't know what they don't know. But in spite of all of that, it's so common for us to focus our attention, our self-awareness attention, on all the people around us, right? Gosh, I wish my spouse could be more self-aware, or my coworker, or my client. But it usually is a risky endeavor. If we take it on ourselves to make someone more self-aware, we may or may not be successful, and there is often an inherent risk. So the first thing I tell people is think really carefully about whether you are willing to accept the worst case scenario of trying to help that person. And, you know, there's a lot of nuances to that depending on the relationship we have with them, the power dynamic we have. But I wouldn't even make up a percentage. I would say a large amount of the time, channeling that energy into our own journey is a better use of our energy and attention. That doesn't mean that we don't have to live with these unself-aware people. So one of the things that our unicorns taught us was focusing on our own reactions and perceptions of their behavior is something we have a lot more control over than the behavior itself. So there's one tool I talk about in my book. I call it the laugh track. And this is actually a mindfulness reframing technique. I developed it when I was working for this very unself-aware, very unintentionally nasty boss. And every time he would say something nasty, instead of getting wrapped up in feeling hurt or offended or sad, I would imagine that we were on a television show with a canned laugh track. And the laugh track would come on every time he said something horrible. And what I noticed was it allowed me to snap out of the moment and out of the instinctive reaction I had and see him a little bit differently. You know, sometimes I would think about it later and I would say, actually, with the laugh track behind it, that was kind of funny. And so what I would encourage people to do, instead of diving head on to that, I'm going to give this unaware person feedback, is to, again, be very careful about making that strategic decision if you want to talk to them or not. And then no matter what, you can always focus on your own perception of their behavior and try to limit the amount of time you spend with them if that's at all possible.
That's fascinating. I'm reminded of the Wimbledon finals recently between Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer. And, Novak had the whole crowd in Wimbledon rooting for Federer. And when somebody asked him, how did you really manage to keep your calm and keep your motivation levels when everybody was rooting for Roger Federer? He said something interesting. He said, each time somebody said, go Roger, I sort of transmutated it in my head. and made it sound as Go Novak for myself.
I love it.
So it sounds a bit like the laugh track point you just made. But that's fascinating, Tasha. Just wrapping up, the one thing I wanted to talk to you about, which really caught my attention, was the notion of catch-22 of self-awareness. And in the book, you say that people who need it the most are usually the least likely to know that they need it. So I think in a way, just so that I ensure that I frame it right, not that I frame it as a external problem, but when I throw myself in that mix, how does one watch out for not falling in this trap? What are the watch outs so that we don't get caught in that catch-22?
I'm going to make this really simple for all of us. And this is a hard one and fought lesson for me personally. It's to make the decision to gently stop assuming that we are self-aware. And there is an inherent paradox both to unawareness and awareness, right? The unaware people usually don't know they're unaware. But the other side of that paradox is the most self-aware people never get overly confident about their level of self-awareness. And they don't do it in a way that is self-deprecating or in a way that erodes their confidence. They do it in a way that is open and curious. There was one unicorn that we spoke to. His name was Kelsey, and he's a middle school science teacher, just a so inspiring, amazing young man. And he likens the quest of self-awareness to exploring space. And what he said was, you know, what I love about it is no matter how much we know, there is always so much that we have yet to learn. And, you know, just speaking personally, this research program has knocked me off of my own self-awareness pedestal. You know, I thought when I started out, I'm pretty self-aware. I'm probably going to discover that. And I discovered that I am not nearly as self-aware as I thought I was. But what I've been able to do, learning from our unicorns and our research subjects, is to reframe that. It's to say, you know, I am going to take the default mindset that I don't know myself as well as I think I do. And I'm going to take every piece of data that comes my way as data, as exactly that, right? Oh, this is really interesting. I wonder what this is about. And I think if we can do that, in some ways, that's half the battle. If we can make that decision that no matter how much I think I know about myself, there's always more to know, that puts us far and away beyond most people.
The metaphor of space is a great one. I guess building self-awareness is a never-ending journey and not something where you get complete mastery at any point in time. As somebody who learns the guitar, I would possibly liken this to music. The more you learn, the more you realize there is to learn. And as you build your capability, you start appreciating nuances that you didn't even know existed earlier when you started out on the journey. Thank you for listening. For more podcast content, please visit playtopotential.com. The website also has content organized by specific themes in the curated playlist section. And to know more about the leadership and transition advisory work I do, please visit the About section at playtopotential.com.